Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the Deep Dive. Andy and I here are enjoying a beautiful spring day. It is May. It is early May. That means the first Saturday in May is on the horizon this weekend. And what happens the first Saturday in May, Andy?
Cinco de Mayo.
Exactly. And we're here to handicap Cinco de Mayo for you, give you all of the best.
We're here to talk about the history of the 5th of Mayo.
Yeah, that's right. It's commonly misconceived as Mexican Independence Day. But in fact, it is celebration of the Kentucky Derby, which is Saturday this week. And it's going to be a hell of a day, man. Cinco de Mayo, Kentucky Derby. It's going to be a fun Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's how it was started. When General Zaragoza, he defeated the French, and then they had a horse race.
That's okay. I would always heard that, but I wasn't sure 100% that was how it started. That's good, confirmation. I appreciate it.
Little history lesson as we go. But, yeah, I am jacked. I do bet horses throughout the year. I live in a cold-weather state. So, literally, like my local track, this is the opening weekend. It's not even open yet. Like, this will be the first racing they have is this weekend. So I like to get up there during the summer a few times, but, I can't bet horses year round. I guess I can online, but I like to go there. I like to actually see the horses. That's a lot more fun.
Nice,
and,
man.
You know, obviously I'm not going to be in Kentucky, but.
Have you been betting horses for a long lot of your life, or is this something relatively new that you're kind of getting into?
Oh, no, we've always gone up to the track. We have a nice local track. They have a card club, and, like, I'm not good at it, but, we try to get better over the years.
Nice.
I've had some nice hits in the past.
What's your general strategy for a day at the track?
I like the mini donuts, usually the tap beers. It is nice, even though it is up in Minnesota, the girls do get all dressed up. That's a lot of fun. I like to, just sitting out in the sun and watching horse racing all day.
That's good stuff, man. Well, if you take $100 with you to the track and, you at least get a couple beers out of it, then you've had a good day. Favorite two tracks here in California. I would rank Del Mar one, just because I love this town of Del Mar, and it's super fun to take the train down the coast and spend an afternoon at the horse track, and then an evening in town there, or go on to San Diego. Spent a lot of had a lot of great experiences at Del Mar. It's a super great time. And then Santa Anita is also here in Southern California, and boy, is that a beautiful spot! Mountains right behind you, and they run some really, really important fast races there over the course of the year. I guess if I had to describe kind of my philosophy going to the track, I'm looking to, mostly play for winners, spray a little bit on some of the preliminary races, try to pick one or two horses that I think look particularly good from the past performances from the daily racing form. If you can kind of get a sense before you go of which jockeys are performing particularly well at that given track, that can give you a great indication of maybe some medium long shots to look out for over the course of the day. And, maybe if you see a race with eight horses or six horses or in that six to eight ballpark, pick a horse that's among the favorites that you think has had, is a rising horse in terms of past performance, and then pick a long shot with a trainer that you recognize or a jockey that's doing particularly well at the track. Hit a couple of those during the day, try to make a little bit of money as long as you're having fun out there. It's a great way to go about a weekend or a weekday day for that matter. So it's kind of kind of my general approach. And, you know, like you, I've been doing this as long as I've been an adult, I guess. But getting more into it, D-gen alert here.
Do you ever bet? And, you know, granted, we're both going to do this, and this doesn't count because it's Kentucky Derby. Do you ever bet on other tracks while you're at the local track?
If I'm at a track, I'm not. No.
Oh, okay. Okay. No. Me neither. I've never done that.
Well, you go to the. Okay, well, I take that back. I've gone to Santa Anita a bunch of times when there was Triple Crown racing going on in the in the East Coast, and it's there I'm betting the horse racing at Santa Anita while also betting the the Belmont or whatever.
I'm just talking about Friday where I'm up at my local is Canterbury Park. And I'm talking like I'm betting a race in Arlington
at the same time.
Yeah, just because then you don't have to wait 20 minutes for the next race.
Yeah,
you find one of the tracks that's like right in the middle, so you can get a race every 10 minutes or so. By the way, it doesn't turn out great.
I don't hold that against you at all, but I will say that it can be overwhelming showing up at a racetrack and not being a regular bettor, going to the window and trying to get your bet in a way that you don't feel like you're A, holding up the line, or B, say something stupid, or C, miscommunicate your bet and then have to stand there and get them to correct it. Like, all that can be super intimidating if you've never done it before. I usually get there when like two or three races are in the books and kind of sit there and study the racing form for like races 5 through 10 or 11 or whatever, and like kind of make my selections and then try to go up to the window and get most of my action all in at once. If there's like one big race towards one Grade 1, Grade 2 stakes towards the end of the day, I'll wait and try to like get a better look at the horses before I get my action down on that one. But I try to keep my visits to the window to a minimum.
Maybe that's a good place to start, because I've seen, like, I've gone with people that just haven't been there before, and they'll walk up and say, put $30 on, California Chrome, and the people are like, that's not how this works.
You have to start
with the track, then the race number, then how much you're betting, what kind of bet, and then... And, then the horse numbers.
Which number horse, right?
Which numbered horse, yeah. It doesn't matter, because there are people going up to the window betting on other tracks all the time. They need to know you're betting Churchill Downs or you're betting, wherever you're at. You got to start with the track and the race number. Otherwise, they'll just make you start all over again. And that's where I like to use the computers a lot, too.
I 100% like to agree. That's the first free tip of the pod. Got to use a computer. Almost certainly, the guys who have been doing this their whole lives and who go multiple days a week, they like to talk to the person at the window. They build a personal relationship and get tips and stuff. But they like to be at the window, and those guys wait until relatively close to a race getting started to get their bets in, and they want nothing to do with waiting behind you in line as you figure out how to put a bet in. And that can be major intimidating. And so if you're relatively new to going to a track and placing bets, go to the computer. And even if you're having trouble figuring it out at the computer and you feel like, damn, I really wish I was talking to a person that would help me out, the people behind the window don't like helping you at all. They're not interested at all in giving you a tutorial on how to put your bet in, unless you happen to find the one nice person who works at a track, which is, maybe there's one at every track, but in my experience, at least, it's pretty intimidating. And so using the computer makes a ton of sense, because even if things get tough and you're just standing there for a long time, you can act like it's the computer's fault, it's freezing or screwing up or something, and then the people behind you can't be too mad. So use the computer.
Yeah, and I guess another big point too is as far as things I see people who don't bet horses do is they don't understand why they can't cash their ticket right away. Why isn't this, instant? It's because they're doing the math to figure out how much the track gets to steal. And then they got to figure out all the bets that came in. And especially on a big race, a big race like the Derby, it can take a while because the pool is coming from everywhere. And it's a few minutes. It takes a little bit before they can start cashing those tickets.
Yeah, and in the exact same vein, you don't really know what your odds are on almost all your bets. I mean, you can have a general idea if you're betting winner, but if you're betting place, if you're betting show, if you're betting trifectas, good luck. You'll have to wait until everything's official before you even know, relatively what kind of payout you're expecting. And that's the way it goes.
You can have some sort of ideas. You know, if a really big favorite does not finish in the money at all, like fourth or worse, then you can start to think about your odds going up, because one of those, those horses are getting pounded on win place show bets, and all that money that the favorite took goes into the pool, and the pool gets relatively larger, and all those underdogs and even the second or third favorites, those odds can get a little sweeter.
Oh, for sure. And on top of that, you're bringing up a lot of great points. This is all good stuff to talk about. You'll get a chance to see the odds updating as the race gets started, as the race gets closer to starting for the winner. There's you're going to almost certainly see a preponderance of people who use the line to make their pick, right? I mean, there's the favorites get bet relatively commonly at tracks, and most of it is because it takes a lifetime of practice and experience to be a very good horse handicapper, and so most of the people who are there are just like, well, somebody else thinks this horse is going to win, so I'll bet it to win, and that's kind of the mentality that you get in, from the general crowd at a horse track, so that always opens up opportunities to find value off the board, hopefully that's where we're going with the Derby this year. I'm interested to hear what your takes are on the Derby, because we didn't really talk about this. Last tip for you guys out there. We're kind of laying this out like you're at the track, and it's super fun. Give it a go if you've never been. Don't be afraid to, hit me up with questions if you're going to the track this weekend and you want to understand a little bit better how to do things. But just know, you can place a bet on a horse to win. You can place a bet on a horse to get second, which is called place. You can bet on it to get third, which is called show. You can bet on an exact finish, 1, 2, 3 in a given race. That's effectively like a 3-team parlay. And the odds payouts on finishing 1-2 an exacta are very good. The odds on a 1-2-3 trifecta are really good.
It's like you're a parlay in your sports betting.
Exactly, but the odds are like you're parlaying a 5-to-1 with a 3-to-1 with a 20-to-1.
Yeah, this example, the heavy, not maybe heavy, but the odds on favorite right now is what, 5-to-2?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, if the lowest bet you'd be making would be like a +250.
Yeah, exactly.
And it depends, the place money doesn't pay as well as winning, but. It can pay pretty well if you can catch a trifecta, exacta, or even a superfecta, which this guy did a couple of years ago by accident.
We'll get into the superfecta in a bit. I guess the last tip, kind of, if you're going to go this route of these really low probability bets, it's not a big deal to bet a dollar, to bet 50 cents. Like, people who have been doing this their whole lives, like, they're
bet a dime.
They're betting, a lot of the time they'll be betting whatever the minimum required is on some of these bets. So don't be like intimidated into, well, I want to bet this trifecta because I heard, somebody said that these three horses are clearly the best in this race and I want to bet them 1, 2, 3. If you don't feel like you have to bet $100 on it, you have to bet a unit on it. People are, getting by with, spreading it out thinly in horse racing, because it is easy to lose your ass. I have had days at the track where I lost every single bet I placed. Those things happen. It's no fun, but as long as you're kind of keeping it light and doing it for fun, then you'll have a great time. The other, just in that same vein, about exactas, about trifectas, if you think you have identified the best two horses in a race, the best three horses in a race, you can always put a box around them.
Box them up.
And
that's you asked about my strategy. That's what I get into.
Oh, for sure. If you're novices, if you're like us and you do this, you know, a couple times a year on the big race days of the year, you know, boxing things is completely reasonable. If you're doing pick fours, don't limit yourself to just one or two options in certain races. Pick lots of them. And I guess I should mention what a pick four is. Like a trifecta is you've called 1, 2, 3 correct in the same race. A pick four is you called the winner correctly in four in a row. And again, you know, think of horse racing is not like betting sports book where you get whatever number you place at the time of the bet. You're betting into a pool. And pick fours are interesting because it's like a lottery tickets, right? People are just spraying all kinds of crazy combinations out there. There's lots of dead money. And so the payouts on pick fours, payouts on pick sixes can be like insanely ridiculous at times. Like I remember I was not going to bet any racing, you know, between Belmont and the Breeders' Cup 1 year. I was like, look, I just don't know enough about this to be squandering money. And out of the blue, a friend, you know, messages me, hey, did you see what the carryover is in the pick six pool at Saratoga? And I was like, no, I'll check it out. And looking, it was like $1 million carryover from Friday to Saturday. And it's like, holy shit, the pick six. So basically everyone that was betting the pick six on a good Saturday summer racing at Saratoga, the pool was everything that was coming on that Saturday, including everything that carried over from the previous Saturday, because no one had won the pick six. And so it was like, you got to get in on this, right? You put some 50-cent pick sixes together. You hit this, you're going to win the whole damn pool or split the pool with whoever else wins. And, you know, you can really have yourself some fun that way. And
that's another nice one, like you talked about boxing, where a lot of people will do, you know, they like one horse in one race, maybe a favorite. And then you combine it with two or three horses in the next race, and then two, three, four horses in the race after that. And then, you know, you can even hit the field in one of them. You can say anyone.
You are so on the money.
And all of a sudden, a 50-cent bet, you made a 50-cent bet on a long shot, but you just made a 50-cent bet on, like, 64 long shot bets. So, you know, all of a sudden it's a $30 bet you made, but essentially it's just a shitload. It's a round robin, a shitload of round robins that only one has a chance. You know, you can't win all of them, obviously, but it is a fun little lotto thing. That's a fun one to do for 50 cents or a buck if you're not putting quite as many picks in. But I do like a good pick three, pick four, pick six.
I love it, dude. You nailed a really key idea that I wanted to kind of bring up, and I had forgotten about it, which is if you get a hot tip, if you have a horse that you really feel strongly about, and let's say it can be a really good horse too, right? Like it can be like a one-to-one type of, it can be a really low paying out horse. And if you want to make more out of that because you feel really confidently in it, daily double it with the race before, daily double it with the race after. So basically you're saying like, okay, well, I'm going to take a swing on a whole bunch of horses in the race before, combine it with this one that I feel really confident in that has relatively low odds, and then do the same with that and going afterwards. So you can really, you know, do this in a way that you know, you can just, you know, corner certain markets and scoop up a ton of money that's just dead from these pools, because not everybody's doing it this way. And we'll get into that when we talk about maybe my favorite way to play the Oaks and the Derby, which is the Oaks Derby double special that they offer. But we're kind of all over the place. You want to talk a little bit about the actual race itself, the weekend itself that we're coming up on, or is there any other types of bets? I guess one other thing I'll mention is you can always bet, you know, a lot of you who are listening are probably like us betting at offshore markets that have affiliated race books, right? They'll have race books, like Five Dimes has a race book, Bovada has a race book. I think almost every online sports book has a race book. That operates in the same way we were just talking about. If you were at the track betting, you're putting your money in the pool, you're not going to get the odds until the pool is final. And, you know, you're going to be operating in that kind of framework. The alternative is you can bet against the, you know, you can bet against the fixed odd lines that are offered as props at some of these offshores. And you know, it's a better way to corner huge numbers like long before races than it is the day of the race. I don't know. You're probably going to lose a decent amount in the hold on the day of the race that it doesn't make a ton of sense to do fixed betting, you know, fixed odds betting. But you know, this week, actually last week even, Justify, the current favorite for the Derby was like, what, +400, +500, something like that. And then, you know, he shows up looking like $1 million and, you know, his morning line odds after he draws pole seven are, you know, 3-1, you know, that's right there, you've gained some line value just in the odds moving down between, you know, pre-draw and post-draw. So, you know, there's other ways to do it, obviously. And, you know, whatever way you want to do it is fine. It all kind of comes down to, like, the day of the race, watching a horse race and watching it play out, watching your horse take his trip, you know, and watching the, you know, kind of the drama play out in such spectacular fashion is a feeling unlike most anything else you'll get in sports betting. Is kind of my two cents. What do you think?
Yeah, and even five dimes just from this morning till right now as I'm speaking on, what is it, about 7:40 Central here on Thursday night, they're offering, it's phrased differently, but essentially they're offering fixed odds on win, place, and show for every horse. You can bet Justify top three at -105 right now. Fixed odds. And all it says is Justify, Mendelsohn, and a minimum 18-horse field must run for action. Different horses have all of them look like they require Justify and Mendelsohn to run. Some of them have list different horses. Obviously, the horse that you're betting on. But you can get fixed odds on win, show, place right now.
Nice.
Do those in the right order.
Matchups?
There's matchups. That's okay, another fun one. Here's another one. These are ridiculous. Victory margin, dead heat.
What?
60-1. Victory margin by a nose, 13.75. Victory margin by a head, by a neck, half to three quarter length. These don't bet these. Here's some fun facts. Yeah, don't do this. I don't know. Do you think someone really breaks away? If you really think someone's going to fuck this field up, you can get about 13-1 that someone wins by 9 lengths or more. It's happened. Even a 3-length winner, just anybody wins by over 3 lengths is +175. It's worth thinking about if you think you're going to get a speed horse.
What do you
think? A late breakaway. I don't know, man. I'm not a horse handicapper.
Yeah, I don't think I got it. I don't think I have a lean on that, but that's an interesting. I'm going to study that a little bit because now I'm intrigued. I guess the day, like the Kentucky Derby is this weekend, and you may be asking yourself, why is this a big deal? Who freaking cares? It's some stupid horse race in Kentucky. And you may also be asking yourself, what's that? Turn the pot off. It's a big freaking deal for a lot of reasons. I guess if I had to kind of paint the picture of what is this race, it is, it's the most prestigious race in the United States, singular. It's, you know, obviously it's the first leg of the Triple Crown, which is exciting. And if your horse, you know, your horse comes in as a relative, as like a prospect, basically. And winning the Derby turns him from a prospect into like, a, you know, a number one overall pick in the horse racing mating world, right? Like he's coming in like, yeah, go ahead.
So in prepping, I'm all jacked up for horse racing. So I listened to some podcasts and I was searching for some more and I ended up downloading like clips. They turned parts of the horse racing radio network into podcasts. And I mean, it's like listening to the radio and it was really fun listening to them. Great info. And their two sponsors were like Jimmy John's and the University of Louisville's equine program. But then they had a third one. And I don't remember which one it was, but basically it's a commercial for like, hey, you want your horse to get fucked by our horse? Like, you should come down here. There was like several different ones they'd list, like the
Equine Tinder. Yeah,
the sire of 3 million, you know, three different millionaire horses, and he made this one with his balls, and you should come down here and bring your lady horse. And like, there was a lot of commercial, you know, they phrase it a lot more eloquently, but basically it was like, yeah, come get your horse fucked down here. Like, I can't imagine what it costs. And I recognized the names. I mean, there were names I recognized. Like, hey, this horse is just waiting around for some horse pudani, and you come bring a big old check and you can have some.
Oh, man. The
just weird commercial, man. Like,
I have to kind of suspend thinking too hard about like the industry of horse racing, because it's so fucking weird. It's so crazy. But you know, kind of circling back to, well, why does the Kentucky Derby matter? Like, you know, maybe right now your horse is worth, I don't know, $1 million. He's a prospect. He wins the Kentucky Derby. Not only do you win an enormous cash prize for getting first, but now your $1 million horse is worth like quarter to, you know, half $1 million stud fee. So every time he foals a cow, every time he sires a foal, you're gonna get paid $500,000. That's like, you know, you're printing money for life, basically. And it's a big
like
deal.
1.4 million. Like, yeah, you win the owners get a shitload.
Right, right. But it, you know, even beyond that, it's really how much the horse is worth as a stud after he's done racing.
That is crazy. Like half a million, that's some of the numbers that get thrown around, half a million. So you're talking, the purse is like 1.5 almost. That's just three loads for that horse later on down the line. Like, it's crazy. Crazy money. I mean, the upfront money's nice, but yeah, that every time that horse goes to town, you could be, you wait for the ultrasound and then you get a big old check.
Yeah, man, it's incredible. The whole world is fucking crazy, and you go deep into the horse handicapping world, and there's a lot of people who make predictions and make picks solely based on lineage and bloodlines and things like that. Like, that's a real deal, like blood magic angle to horse racing that is, makes some people a lot of money. So the Derby itself, they do a full day of racing on Saturday at Churchill Downs. And the 12th race of the day is the Kentucky Derby. It is very difficult to qualify for. Not just any horse can get in. You have to win a certain amount of points through the qualifying season, and you have to be a certain age. You have to be a 3-year-old. You have to be a 3-year-old colt, and you have to have qualified via a certain number of points, and then you're allowed to enter the Derby. And there's a guaranteed field of 20 horses running. That is a huge, huge field. I mean, basically, this is probably the biggest field of horses that is run all year, I think. I'm just trying to think in my head if I can remember anything bigger, and I really can't. Usually like 14 is kind of the maximum you'll see at a given field. So this is a 20 horse field, which is enormous. And we haven't seen a lot of these prospects race against each other before.
There's been some matchups, but usually maybe two or three in a race, some are out on the West Coast, some are down in Florida, some are doing the Arkansas Derby, some are up in New York, a couple of them, at least one, I think maybe just one's over in Europe racing, and they're all over the place.
Yeah, so the background of these horses has them racing all over the place, all kinds of different surfaces, all kinds of different tracks, all kinds of different lengths, all kinds of different fields. So it's not, you know, it's not as straightforward as like, you know, trying to figure out, is Usain Bolt going to win the 100-meter sprint in the Olympics? Like, you kind of have a sense of how he stacks up against the field. This is much more uncertain. There is a lot we don't know about these horses. There are a lot of horses that, you know, haven't really been, you know, raced very heavily. And when we get to kind of handicapping the horses themselves in the Derby, the favorite Justify, I don't know whether you know this, you may have heard this. It's been a pretty common talking point, I guess, that will he break the Apollo curse? And you're like, well, that sounds dumb. What's the Apollo curse? Well, basically, it's been 136 years since a horse that did not race as a two-year-old won the Kentucky Derby. And that's a long damn time. There's two horses that are the favorite in the top three, right? The 3-1 Justify and 6-1 Magnum Moon. Neither one races a two-year-old. So, you know, and you may say, well, that's a stupid curse. What does that have to do with, you know, having, you know, a horse that's good enough to win the Derby? Well, you know, experience counts. It's not easy to win the Derby in a horse in a field with 20 horses. You're going to have some horses that like to go out fast, some horses that like to close. You're going to have all kinds of opportunities to get bumped around as they come out of the gates. You're going to have all kinds of opportunities to get off the pace you want to go just because the horse is excited or the horse gets, loses a little bit of confidence when he's not on the lead. You know, all kinds of crazy things happen in a horse race that's this big. And so experience matters. And so a horse like Justify, which didn't race as a two-year-old, and in fact only raced three times as a three-year-old, we saw him in February, March, and April. He won all three races. He's undefeated. He looked absolutely spectacular, especially in his last race at the Santa Anita Derby. And therefore, he's been trained by Bob Baffert, who's the current most famous U.S. trainer, having trained American Pharoah, our last Triple Crown winner. People believe in him.
Is he your favorite trainer?
No, who's my favorite trainer? I'm not a Baffert guy though. For the Derby, I'm on the Todd squad.
I was Team Pletcher till this morning. I heard a good Chad Brown interview.
Chad Brown is the man. Like, Chad, you know, here's a little tip.
I don't bet horse racing that much, but I might have a favorite trainer.
Yeah, Chad Brown is pretty freaking awesome. He's awesome. So is who's the guy that you train? I'll have another Doug whatever from Santa Anita. He's pretty great too. They're characters. My good tip from my buddy who bets a lot of horse racing. Doug O'Neill. Yeah, my buddy who bets a lot of horse racing, Wicked Odds on Twitter. He is a huge Chad Brown fan, and he's kind of talked me up to where if I see a race at Saratoga, if it's on the turf, if it's a Chad Brown trained horse, and if it's an Irad Ortiz jockey, then I'm blind betting that regardless of the race and who else is in it, because that's just like it's a winning combination so often it's crazy. So Chad Brown is good. I like Chad Brown, but. I like him better on turf than dirt.
You want to talk horses? So, we're not going to talk about all 20.
No, for sure not. There's really only probably five or six to give serious talk, you know, serious credit to talking about, I guess. Yeah. So let's get right into it, and we'll kind of mix in some discussion of how these teams, you know, how these horses performed in the prep races. Mm-hmm. And I guess just kind of I got to give this guy a shout out because he put together such a nice piece of work. But I retweeted this week a pace thesis that I thought was pretty strong that kind of predicted like, okay, well, here's what to expect in terms of how these teams, you know, how these horses are going to come out of the gate, who's going to set the pace, how many fast horses there are, because fast horses, you know, multiple fast horses in the same race can sometimes, you know, make the pace creep. And as it turns out, there's really only one horse in this that's an early speed horse, and that's Promises Fulfilled out of the three. He got a good draw in terms of getting out ahead of the field and setting the pace. It would be expected that Promises Fulfilled and the four horse Flame Away are probably the two fastest horses over the first half of the race. I don't think either one has a realistic shot at hitting the board. Because this, Andy, is the deepest and the most competitive Kentucky Derby field of my lifetime, and it's not close. This talent pool in this race is truly incredible.
You can expect like Justify Audible, Bolt de Oro, and maybe a couple Magnum Moon, maybe a couple of those to come out. maybe not quite as hot as Promises Fulfilled, but they'll come out hot early.
For sure. You know. For sure. It's but it's this field is stacked, man. And you know, it's just kind of in that vein. You know, if you've heard tons of different people's takes on who, you know, which horses are going to win this race, and you know, it's you're overwhelmed by it. Like, you know, I would say your two choices are, you know, pick two or three of the horses that you think have a legit shot based on what you've heard, bet them to win, or pick one horse that has kind of medium to, you know, longer odds and bet him across the board. So basically bet him to win, place, show. You know, your best shots are probably those two approaches. Of course, I'm going to be spraying. I'm looking for wins. I'm looking for exactas. I'll be looking for trifectas here. And I'll probably play a superfecta. What about you?
Oh, shit, yeah. I'll do a cheap superfecta box, maybe a keyed box with a couple horses up top. And then I always like a good get-rich-quick scheme one where I'll put, like, I'll pick legitimately four horses to finish in that order, a single superfecta for like 10 or 20 bucks.
Oh, man.
You know, just you never know. And I've spent 10
full
bucks.
Full on lotto ticket. Thing. Yeah, for full on lotto ticket. I got
those,
you.
Those would pay well.
Okay. I mean, well, have you figured out what your
horse you're going to put in there? I love the way everything I'm hearing, everything I saw, Justify looks great.
Yes. He's
just a fucking specimen. Look at that unit.
He looks like a winner. Yeah. Look at that unit.
So yeah. I'm looking at probably Justify and Audible as some heavy parts of some exacta boxes, some trifecta boxes, some superfecta.
God, I love
boxes.
That.
I love good magic. I don't know if he'll make it into as many. I like his spot.
Yeah.
I like him to come up late. There's a few long shots. I'll make some long shots. My boy Jack will fall into some of that. And then Mendelsohn didn't get a great spot. He's way out in the parking lot, as they say, out in 14 there, but he'll make it into a couple. I'm just assuming all these are boys.
Yeah, I think we're looking at a full slate of boys this year. Yeah.
And then I can't remember who my last dog was there. Maybe some Hofburg. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm cold on Bolt d'Oro right now. And I'm a little cold on like Vino Rosso.
Yeah. What about
just shitty, shitty spot. Way out at 18.
Yeah, he's a closer though, so maybe it doesn't matter that much. We'll see. Let's back up a second.
The closers are tough if they can't find some position early though with that huge field.
It's true.
A lot of traffic. So what do you think?
It's true.
You're just gonna bet fucking everything, but.
Well, I'm gonna bet a lot. That's for sure. Yep. I hit a pick four last year on a bet I placed at TVG that I had, and I've just left. I didn't even cash it out, so I have an enormous bankroll to be playing with on this race day, and it's gonna get loose for sure. In the Derby itself, I agree 100% with you about Audible and Justify. Those grayed out as the clear two best horses in this race. We talked a little bit about Justify already. He's the favorite. He's a Bob Baffert horse. Bob Baffert is an amazing trainer. He is jockey. His jockey is Mike Smith. Mike Smith has won an enormous amount of highly important races. He is among the most accomplished jockeys in this race. And there are, if I want to keep giving you pluses, besides just he looks amazing, he had the single best race of all of the lead-ups. His performance in the Santa Anita Derby would have beaten any other horse that I've seen race so far this season.
I don't know what a speed number is, but his speed number there was good.
It was incredibly good. I'm looking at he had a 114. 114. I'm not sure what is. It's incredibly high. And he I'm looking at BrisNet, so maybe, you know, depending on who does your speed numbers, you could see different, you know, different numbers and things like that. But as by contrast, Audible, who won the Florida Derby, his speed number was only 107, and that was still a super impressive race. So it's incredible where Justify has come from. He kind of came out of nowhere. He wasn't really projected to be a contender until his run in March at Santa Anita. But let's throw some cold water on him. Okay. Number one, he's fighting against the Apollo curse, which just really means he's inexperienced. He's also inexperienced outside of Santa Anita. All three races he's raced have been Santa Anita races. He's also a little bit inexperienced in a big field. He ran his first two wins were in fields of 5 and 5, and then there were 7 in the Santa Anita Derby. So he's been in relatively small fields for all of his races, which means he's never really faced adversity. He, more negatives, he's, I guess, just in general, a price of 3-1 or 5-2 is not a great price in a wide, in a relatively wide open race.
20 horses deep.
Yeah, so you're not getting a great number there. That said, like, should he be the favorite? Yes, absolutely. Is there still value in that number? Maybe. And so I don't know if I'm going to end up putting most of my eggs in this basket, because I feel like Audible is as good a horse, and he's at 8-1. You know, you bet 8-1, you bet him across, you know, win, place, show, you're still going to make some money even if he shows. And I also think, I guess we'll just pivot right into Audible. He's a Todd Pletcher horse, part of the Todd squad. He won the Florida Derby. He was not in good form that day that he won the Florida Derby. I don't know if you've heard this. Have you heard this story?
A little bit.
He was a little bit under the weather, and he still managed to pull off a win. He beat Hofsburg. He beat Mississippi. He came from off the pace to put together a pretty impressive performance while not necessarily being in the best of form. And that was in late March. So he's had a good, nice long rest leading up to this. I think he's a little off the radar. He doesn't have the buzz for whatever reason. He's the type of horse that I think will benefit from a relatively slow pace race. And I think we're talking about a potentially a slower pace race here.
If Promises Fulfilled gets squeezed there, squeezed up next to the rail, or just doesn't come out of the gate hot and can't get out to the front and set the pace, it could be a pretty slow race.
That's for sure. That is true.
Bloodlines are great. Fifths of a second yet, or do they? Other tracks still do. I love that one.
They only do fifths of a second, I think. Yeah.
Two fifths of a second.
Yeah, they only do fifths of a second on the splits, I think. So, you know, there's a lot to like about Audible. Todd Pletcher, why does that matter? Well, he's a very good trainer. His training methodology has his horses peaking in the spring. At least his up-and-coming horses are peaking in the spring. You're going to see a lot of races this weekend where Todd Pletcher horses are winning, or at least hitting the board. Overall, he's got 4 horses in this race. Audible's a Pletcher horse, part of the Todd squad, Magnum Moon, Vino Rosso, and Noble India are all Pletcher horses.
He's trained a couple winners.
Yeah, the only knock I can give Audible, the only thing that's made me a little wary about going all in on Audible, is he's switching jockeys. He won 2 races back in December of last year and February this year with Castellano on board, but then he switched to Velasquez for the Florida Derby. Velasquez put together a brilliant trip with Audible at the Florida Derby. Again, Audible was a little off form in that race. But Velasquez has opted to switch here and throw his allegiance on board with, I can't remember, where's Velasquez?
I know what you're talking about. There's too much going on. I can't remember.
I know. There's just too many people. But anyway, Velasquez is on Good Magic? Or no, he's on Bolt d'Oro's Espinoza. I don't know. Castellano is switched from Bolt d'Oro to Audible. There's like a musical chairs of jockeys going on. I guess maybe Velasquez isn't riding anyone. So whatever the case is, he's on Castellano, or Castellano's on him, and Castellano has not had a particularly
Velasquez
good
is going to ride Vino Rosso.
Oh, he's on Vino Rosso. Okay. That was
another Pletcher horse.
Another Pletcher horse, and I'm not sure I understand what his decision making was moving from Audible, because I think I had heard it was Velasquez's decision.
It was, and he also was the jockey that won last year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and I would have Velasquez, the jockey, and Pletcher the trainer were the combo that won with Always Dreaming last year. Always Dreaming last year was the favorite, and he won. I guess this is some other factual kind of information to kind of put back into your brain as you're handicapping this. We're on a run of favorites. Favorites are doing extremely well at the Derby over the last handful of years, and it's not a mystery why. The Derby has specifically reconfigured the way that they seed this race with horses such that you can't qualify by winning a bunch of sprints. You have to rack up points. You have to run some more competitive races. You have to run against some more challenging horses to gain the, you know, so you're gaining more points by second and third place finishes and proving that you're a very, you know, good horse than you are by entering smaller sprints, smaller fields, and just waxing the competition. So you can't kind of sneak your way into the race, so to speak, based on the way they've reconfigured the points system. The result of that, there's been less sprinters. The result of less sprinters, there's been less crazy, insane, fast pace out of the gate. That's burned out some of the favorites. And so now the favorites can have more favorable trips are fresher coming around the coming around the home stretch and can put together solid finishes. All that said, Always Dreaming was lucky as I've ever seen a horse get last year, because by far I thought the best horse that day was Classic Empire, and Classic Empire got absolutely destroyed out of the gate. I don't know if you remember this. Am I telling a familiar story to you?
Oh yeah, I watched the Derby.
He had the 14 slot, and basically if there's so many gates for the Derby that they have to actually put a whole auxiliary gate on the side of the main gate in order to get 20 horses lined up. And so the typical maximum is 14 horses, so the last gate on the main gate is 14. And then they have this big, weird kind of, you know, connection to the auxiliary gate, and so there's a big gap between horse 14 and horse 15. And then the auxiliary horses, 15 through 20, are way out to the outside, right?
Because it's not a big enough sporting event to build a bigger starting block, you know?
Right, if you're only doing it once a year. But I get what you're saying. I get 100% what you're saying.
Instead, like, oh, man, I mean, it's ridiculous. The Super Bowl and all, but...
Yeah. Yeah, are we sure we want to build a whole thing just for this? So last year, at least when the Derby started, one of the co-favorites, Irish War Cry, was in 17, and his team was relatively inexperienced. They were determined to get him out on the pace right away, and they were freaking out about being on the outside gates. Bell goes off, the horses are away, and Irish War Cry just barrels to the inside and just, you know, pushes. I think he pushed the 15 or the 16 horse directly into Classic Empire. Classic Empire somehow stayed on his feet and looked really close, like he was going to get hurt or go down. It was brutal. So he had maybe the worst start and just got rattled out of the gate. And then still, after all that, rallied to finish, I think, fourth. I think he landed in the four hole. I thought he was the best horse that day, but by chance he ended up getting smashed out of the gate, and Always Dreaming ended up being the winner. The rest is history. Always Dreaming is running tomorrow, by the way. Did you see that? He's in one of the undercard events.
Yeah.
He's returned to Kentucky. Yeah, he's returned to Churchill Downs. I'm probably going to bet him in that spot. I kind of like him in that one. I'm all over the place.
How many rails did you rip just now? You're very excited for the Derby.
Oh, I'm fired up, man. Oh, absolutely. I'm high on horse racing. the moral of the story is the best horse in the field doesn't always win because crazy shit happens. Crazy shit with the pace.
Horses deep. It's yes, so hard.
Yeah, yeah. That all that said, I would expect a favorite to win based on the way the field is laid out. And I don't mean the favorite. I just mean a favorite, which means basically one of, say, the top six is going to finish first in this race. Yeah, and the trick, the name of the game is figuring out which one. Which brings us to an interesting horse that I've been dying to talk about, and that is kind of the buzz of the Thursday of Derby week, and really the buzz of the whole run-up, because he's such a mystery, and that is Mendelsohn. Mendelsohn is trained by Aidan O'Brien. Many around the world consider Aidan O'Brien to be the best trainer in the world. His jockey, Ryan Moore, again, an international figure considered to be one of, if not the best, jockey in the world. This combo of O'Brien and Moore is formidable, and their colt, Mendelsohn, is a badass. This horse is fast. I first remember seeing him run at the Breeders in the Turf Classic. He ran the Juvenile Turf Classic, which is one of the biggest race, biggest purses at the Breeders. You know, at the Breeders' Cup happens in November, and the two races, the Juvenile Dirt and the Juvenile Turf, give you a sense of who some of the contenders are going to be for the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown. Mendelsohn won the turf. He ran a sick race. And he beat some really tough horses, too. U.S. Navy Flag was in that field. Catholic Boy was in that field. Maybe U.S. Navy Flag wasn't in that field. But there was a handful of very good horses that ran that race and have now gone on to be, you know, champions in their own right. He's proven himself against a field of horses in the United States. The Breeders' Cup last year was in Del Mar, so he's ran in the United States before. He typically trains at his stables in Ireland. He's a multinational figure here. Trains in Ireland, ran at several races in Great Britain and Ireland, and then most recently was entered in and put on the beating of the year in the Dubai Stakes. The Dubai Stakes was only the UAE Derby. In Dubai was only a Grade 2 race.
Shitload.
Yeah, it was only a Grade 2 race. Once Mendelsohn was entered, I don't think anyone really thought, okay, well, we're going to put our horse in here up against Mendelsohn and have him get his ass kicked. And so the field was pretty weak. In fact, the second place finisher was a horse called Raya, who's running in the Kentucky Oaks as a filly. It didn't really matter. He ran faster than any horses run this year. The problem is, it was a biased track. If you're running the rail in the on the Dubai track, then you have it's like you're running with a tailwind in a sprint race, and so you have you have this time that came out of that that's not reliable. That said, it was crazy, crazy, crazy fast. That said, the Dubai, the UAE Derby was 1 3/16, which is long. Most of these horses haven't raced 1.25 miles, which is the distance for the Derby. 1 3/16 is the closest you're going to get to that. He looked spectacular. Did you watch that clip by any chance?
I did not. I saw parts. I didn't watch the whole thing. I saw stills of the end where...
He won by like 18 lengths or something crazy. It was a lot. It was a ton. He had a clear lead, and rather than kind of ease into it, they like pushed him hard because I think they knew that this was like his tune-up, and they wanted to make sure that he knew he had it in him to go 1.25 miles. So then the question is, we're building up Mendelsohn here. Mendelsohn is the number 2 odds-on horse here. For a lot of the run-up, Mendelsohn and Justify were pretty close to the same odds, or Mendelsohn was kind of the cold co-favorite. People have kind of had their eye on him since he won the Juvenile Turf back at the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, he's still the second favorite here at 5-1. And I think, you know, you have to kind of, before you can do anything else in handicapping this year's Derby, I think you have to take a stand on Mendelsohn, right? You have to decide, like, am
I feel like there is some bias against, you know, a Euro horse has never won.
Absolutely.
And granted, the pedigree isn't from Europe or, you know, the Middle East or anything. It's an American pedigree, but yeah, horses don't run in Europe and then come over here and win the Derby. It hasn't happened.
Right. It's
so there's kind of a built-in bias there, I guess.
There's a built-in bias because, yeah, when you're racing in Dubai in March, and then you're traveling to Ireland to train, and then you're traveling to Lexington to race, and you are in quarantine for several days and aren't even out there on the track training or getting exposure to the conditions until Thursday of race week. It's a hurdle, right? The rest of these horses were kind of in their comfort zone. Some of these horses train not, you know, down the street. They didn't even have to travel particularly far to get here. Yeah, it's going to be a challenge. If he overcomes that difficulty, he really is like that spectacular of a horse. And there are signs that he is a spectacular horse. He's a half brother of Beholder. Did you know that? He's got some.
He's Audible's uncle.
He's Audible's uncle. Is he Audible? No, he's not.
Yeah, he's oh, like okay. Into Mischief's brother too, I think.
Oh,
yeah.
You're right. That's true.
Yeah,
you're
Into right. Mischief. Right. It's Audible's sire. So yeah, some of these horses.
Like, Audible's uncle. That's right.
Yeah, like no offense to you if this is where you live, but I mean all these horses are kind of related in a roundabout way. It is the South.
Yeah, I think there are out of these 20 horses, there's something like 8 grandsires or something. Like it's really spooky.
Yeah, it's like a family reunion.
Yeah, but Beholder was, you know, a generationally outstanding mare who recently retired. Our good friends in the Twitter chatting world will remember Beholder beating Songbird by a Nose in the Breeders' Cup 2 years ago. It was a heartbreak because there was combined between us probably close to 10 grand on Songbird to win that race. But all that said, Beholder's still spectacular. She's won me a lot of money over the years. She raced a lot in California. She was a hell of a horse. And I'm, you know, just the fact that Mendelsohn's related to Beholder pulls on my heartstrings a little bit, and I want to be a Mendelsohn fan. But you got to take a stand, you know?
Or
put them in your box. What do you think? Am I setting this up right? Do you have to have an opinion on Mendelsohn before you do anything else? Like either you believe in this horse and you think he's being underrated because of the bias track, because of the travel, or you think he's overrated and you think the travel and stuff is going to squash him? Like is this the right setup?
He's looked good at the track.
He has.
He looks comfy. He looks.
Did you watch the videos of him today? Yeah,
he looks excited to be there, and I think he's going to be fine. I think I'm going to have some Justified boxes and some Audible boxes and some Mendelsohn boxes, and that's going to be a big filthy Venn diagram that meets in the middle with a bunch of like I'm going to have a lot of boxes.
Yeah,
it's box day. And then yeah. I like some straight up bets too.
I like it. Okay. Well, we're not really helping people because I'm not sure I've fully gotten to where
we are not professional horse handicappers. Go read some articles, listen to some more podcasts, and flip a fucking coin because this is tough. Like you pick some horses you like and box them up or do some fun pick sixes, pick fours. Or just pick a horse you like and bet him win, play, show. And if he wins the race, you win all three bets. It's a lot of fun.
I like it. That's always a good call. I mean, even if it's the favorite, you're still gonna make money on a place and get some of your money back on a show. So it's that's that's always an acceptable way to approach this if you're new to it. That said, I've gone through various stages this week where I've been like, wow, Mendelssohn's the best horse in this field. He's going to win. Everyone's underrating him. And then I've kind of right now all the way back the other way where I'm thinking, something's going to happen to him in this race. Something about the travel is going to get to him. They're asking too much out of this horse, especially because he's young. Mendelssohn was, I think he was like a May foal. And a lot of these other horses were February, March foals. And so he's not as developed, but boy, does he have attitude. You mentioned seeing some of the videos of him, man. He has some spunk. He has some attitude. If he were to get a clean look sometime later in the race and, you know, show off his speed, it wouldn't surprise me if Mendelssohn wins.
Nothing would surprise me. I'm not taking much of a stand because I don't know if you heard, it's a 20 horse field.
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that.
It's tough, but I have horses that I like. I'm going to combine them. I'm going to have some fun plays. I'll probably do some win play shows on two or three horses. I have a fixed odd bet 7-1 on Audible. I like Audible. I place that just in case he takes some money and ends up winning. I don't know. That's my horse. That's my horse. It's been my horse for the last month. And I kind of like to stick to my guns if I say I like a horse, I guess. And he has, I mean, he won the Florida Derby. He's a winner.
Yeah. Yeah. If I had to take a stand, I'm taking a stand on Audible as well. Justify, I'm concerned about. You know, there are strikes against Mendelssohn for travel, for age, just for unknowns about his speed, his recent speed. There's strikes against Justify, inexperience. Also, I'll mention both of these horses sired by Scat Daddy. Scat Daddy got 18th of 20 in his running at the Kentucky Derby. Scat Daddy also has yet to sire a winning horse at the Kentucky Derby or for the Triple Crown for all that, I think. It would set a lot of marks were Justify or Mendelssohn to pull off a victory here, I'm not one who's really like out there waving a flag like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to be there for the first time that, you know, a horse that wasn't raced as a 2-year-old wins the Derby. I'm going to have a ticket on that horse. Like, I don't care. And I think, I do think Audible is being overlooked a little bit. I do think the 8-1 number is a little too good to be true. For all those reasons, I'm wearing number 5, and the white colors with the little A on them on Saturday. So, you want to talk about a couple of these other horses?
Not really.
I'm going to paint a little bit of a picture for some of these. Let me paint a picture on some of these. Good Magic. Why would you want to back Good Magic? And I agree with you. He's an interesting
good trainer,
one.
Good trainer, good jockey.
Good training. Chad Brown. Is his trainer, Jose Ortiz, is jockey. Yeah. He's good. 12-1 is a great number. Good Magic came out of the blue to win the juvenile dirt at the Breeders' Cup, which is a really prestigious race. He beat some really good horses in that race. He beat two of the other horses in this race. Solomini got second and Bolt d'Oro got third, although Bolt d'Oro ran like the widest, craziest trip
that's
I've ever seen.
Kind of a knock on him.
It is a little bit.
Is he the one too that? Which is the horse that's been taking the weird drifting at the end?
That one is Magnum Moon.
That is. That's the other Pletch horse.
Yeah, we're gonna get to Magnum Moon in a second. Let's go down the list here. So Good Magic. He won the Bluegrass, which is impressive. All that said, he's kind of underwhelmed in terms of speed, and you can make an argument that outside of what he did at the juvenile dirt last November, he's not as good as that performance for whatever reason. Therefore, he's not good enough to beat this very, very good field, which includes the horse he beat in Del Mar last year, Bolt d'Oro. Bolt d'Oro, I've heard it both ways. Bolt d'Oro, we'll say. This is an interesting horse because he was the odds-on favorite, like as of a year of most of 2017. Like, people were paying attention to him all through August, September. He won three very highly contested races through August and September. He was the huge favorite. All of the horse experts I knew picked him to win the juvenile dirt. His jockey, Corey Nakatani, took him on the most bizarre, most terrible trip I've seen in that race. Good Magic won going away.
Shit-canned.
Got shit-canned, exactly. He then raced with Castellano twice, but Castellano decided, now I get to race for Audible because Velasquez decided he wanted Vino Rosso, so they called in the old badass Victor Espinoza to ride Bolt d'Oro, whatever. And Victor Espinoza has won me more money than any other jockey in lifetime. He is on the downside of his career, in my opinion, though. It's been a while since he's won some really important, impressive races. He was the jockey that won the Triple Crown on American Pharoah. He was a guaranteed lock, stone cold lock, all throughout the summer. Any race he was in, any nag he was on, he won at Del Mar through the years. And there was a couple year period where you just go pick up the program and you wouldn't even, you know, if you saw Victor Espinoza was in the race, you didn't even do any studying. You just bet that horse and it came through. All that said, he's not that jockey anymore. He doesn't have a strong relationship with Bolt d'Oro. I haven't loved what I've heard about Bolt d'Oro this week. Have you heard anything positive about him?
No, and he can't be justified.
He can't beat Justify. Well, he sure as hell couldn't beat him in the Derby. Justify clowned him in the Santa Anita Derby.
Yeah,
clowned him. And Bolt did not have a great trip. And you can make. I think I'd heard he like had a shoe come loose or something crazy. Whatever. I'd heard. You know, that it wasn't a fair evaluation of him in the Santa Anita Derby. I also heard that, or it's true, that his speed, even the second best to Justify, would have won any of the other prep races, right? He was fast enough in that Santa Anita Derby, even though he lost to Justify, that he would have won the Florida Derby, he would have won the Arkansas Derby, he would have won the Wood Memorial, he would have won the Bluegrass. All the other big ones he would have won with that speed figure. So it's possible that people are selling him short. He's at a price of 8-1. I think that reflects how well he did against Justify. But in all fairness, he's lost two really tough races this year. He lost to Good Magic in the Breeders' Cup on a three race losing streak, effectively. I'm not interested in having him at the top of my card. But he'll almost certainly, I'll be looking for him to hit the board in some way. What do you think about that?
Yeah. I'm also a little disenchanted with him.
Okay. How about we talked about Mendelsohn. How about Moon?
Yeah, that's another six, one I can't make up my mind on.
6-1, Todd Pletcher horse. I had heard that Pletcher was most confident about Magnum Moon coming into this race, and he kind of lost his shit when Magnum Moon got drawn into the 16. It might have just been general displeasure with the fact that he put four horses in the race, and they drew 16, 18, and 19. You know, they 5, 16, 18, and 19. But all that said, Magnum Moon, like Justify, undefeated. Magnum Moon, like Justify, has beaten some good horses handily. He won the Arkansas Derby, which is a huge indicator. He beat Quip in that race. Quip is a very good horse. He beat Solomini in that race. Solomini is kind of this. Solomini, I got a funny feeling he's going to land on the board because he seems to sneak his way into second or third. He seems to show or place in a lot of these big races. So I've got my eye on Solomini for whatever reason.
Yeah, but Moon ran that. He had 100. For that speed figure at the Rebel where he beats Solomini was favored, I think, in that race.
Yes, he was.
And
yes, he was.
If you remember Malibu Moon.
Yeah.
That's his dad.
Oh.
How it works. It's just like people. You keep the same last name, I guess.
AP Indies is Grandpappy. AP Indy, yes. Also Noble Indies Grandpappy.
Yeah, and AP Indy, I think Orb, somewhere down his
Orb. Was, yeah, he was a fine anyway. Horse. Yeah,
he's down. He's down the AP Indy bloodline too. So he's. Yeah. Tappet's down there. I'm looking there. He had a bunch of horses. This AP Indy really.
He was very prolific. Yes. Yeah. Yes. He had the good seed for sure. He was good at making baby horses.
Yeah. Lucky Pulpit. That's California Crump Pappy. So yeah, Magnum Moon undefeated, inexperienced, but the odds don't seem to care on Justify. So why should, why shouldn't you take a little longer odds and throw Magnum Moon in there? Maybe a win place show or a, you know, an exacta box. I'd love that.
Yeah, you know, that I'm not a huge fan of the short turnaround between the Arkansas and the Kentucky Derby. He's had basically 7 days less rest than the rest of the horses and 14 days less than Mendelsohn. All that said, he's a great horse. Pletcher's a great trainer. Maybe this is a sneaky one. I think he's going to have to beat me, though. I mean, it really comes down to you got to throw certain horses out. And I'm throwing Magnum Moon out because of the inexperience factor. And the outside draw, I don't love it. He's going to have a difficult trip. Those are all our favorites. Vino Rosso, you want to talk about him at all? You're cool on Vino Rosso, I guess, huh?
I'm cool just because I like Pletcher horses, but and I like the jockey, but I don't like the starting spot. If you want to throw him in, it's a nice booster if he hits the board.
Yeah, that's true. He's a nice. I like throwing him in because he's a closer. It's possible it could be a rainy, gross day, and it could be very tough on these horses. And maybe you know you get a guy with some closing speed. He can do something special if it's just a whack ass race. I don't see really any particular mutters here that are worth pointing out.
I think it's supposed to be nice by the time we get to Saturday anyway. I think the track should be in pretty good condition according to my meteorological looking at and whatnot. Okay. Looked a little bit ahead. There might be some sloppy condition for the Oaks, but I think for the Derby by the afternoon, I think we'll be looking good.
Okay. Well, some of the horses I will not have on any of my in the mix in any way. I'm out on Combatant. I'm out on Noble Indy. I'm out on Instilled Regard. I'm out on Bravazo. I'm out on Enticed. My Boy Jack is interesting. Hofburg is interesting. Lone Sailor is interesting. I'm out on Flame Away. I'm out on Promises. I'm out on Free Drop Billy. And Ferenz Fire, he gets a participation medal for showing up and drawing the one. Somebody had to do it. So that's about it. What do you think, man?
Pick your winner right now, or pick your exacta.
I guess you know what I'm gonna throw a little cold water on Hofburg.
That's not an exacta.
No, I know. I just meant to say this. Well, I'm gonna throw a little cold water on Hofburg. Yeah, sure. He's looked great. I don't think he's the kind of horse you want to look at later for the summer or at the Breeders' Cup. He's going to do something awesome. Mott William is his trainer, and they generally are not prepared for this time of year as the Pletcher horses, as the Baffert horses. I bet you he'll run a fine race, but I don't think he's going to be in the you know, he's in like the 6 to 10 range for me, I think. I want to throw a little cold water on. There was one other one. Forget about it. And I was just going to mention Vino Rosso. If he doesn't win, or if he doesn't land on the board here, I have him circled for somebody I'm looking to come back and make noise at the Belmont. His style, his stride, everything I've seen him in practice in his races screams the kind of horse that's going to win at the Belmont. So keep that in your back pocket for later on this spring. Well, exacta. You have to pick one exacta. Who you got?
Audible Mendelsohn.
Ooh. Audible Mendelsohn. That is a good one, man.
What's your so 5-5-14. And then fun trivia, which horse has made the most money thus far of the 20?
Well, the purses are all over the fucking place. Mendelsohn's got to be damn close. Good Magic's got to be close too. They both won Breeders' Cup purses, and Mendelsohn won the Dubai, which is
Mendelsohn has about like 1.9 mil, and Good Magic's about 1.8, and I think there's only other Magnum Moon might be the only other $1 million horse in the whole shooting match.
I like it.
Bolt Oro.
Well, I'm gonna go. Not that my exact is gonna be 5-7. I think Audible beats out Justify. I think those are the two best horses in the best condition in this race. So 5-7 for me. I'll probably box that and have 5-7-7-5. I might box 5-14 with you as well, because goddamn, does Mendelsohn inspire? His runs are so impressive. I got beat by him at the Breeders' Cup turf, juvenile turf, so I always have sort of a soft spot when I get beat by a horse that really shows out like that. You want to talk about the Oaks?
Is there much to talk? I mean, it's kind of really. I'm looking.
Two horse race. I don't know much about either of these horses.
I do like betting Friday, but it's.
It's going to be a complete sloppy shit show of a race. The weather is not looking good.
Like, it is a two-horse race, but then also it's going to get sloppy. So I might just be laying off the Oaks because I haven't done enough research into which of these girls gets down and filthy in the mud.
The take I've heard on Midnight Bisou. So the two horse race we're referring
Bisou
to.
Bisou,
the 10 horse Midnight Bisou, and the 14 horse Monami Girl. Both have, these, and by the way, we'll say the Oaks is the premier race on Friday. It is all fillies. And they are, it's the same, it's basically the parallel. Three-year-old fillies, just like the Derby is, three-year-olds, and in the end just happens to be three-year-old colts most years. This year is three-year-old colts only. The three-year-old fillies last year hit a huge winner. Thank you to the horse racing expert, Randy Moss. He tipped Abel Tasman, and Abel Tasman...
Straight cash, homie, man.
Abel Tasman ran one of the most fun races I've seen all year. I'm not just saying this because her win clinched a pick four that paid an enormous amount of money for me, but she was like nowhere near the pace. I looked like she was out of the race, and it was like, wow, gee, Randy, thanks for the tip. And she came flying down the home stretch, caught everyone on a wet track. And it was so fun to watch and so exciting. Her speed figure down the home stretch was just outstanding. She's running this weekend, and I'll be betting her again just out of respect, but also out of
nostalgia.
You have a soft spot. Nostalgia, thank you. For nostalgia's sake, I'll be betting on Abel Tasman in her race this weekend. Look out for Rushing Fall, too, tomorrow. I think Rushing Fall, I haven't heard for sure if she's going to run on the – she's entered in two races, but she got a bad draw in the turf classic on Saturday. So I think there's a chance she runs in the race she's entered on Friday. But she's a very, very good horse. She's worth looking out for. The tip of the weekend that I've picked up to this point is You don't have to bet every race, but this
that might be the tip of the weekend.
The tip of the weekend is have fun. Don't bet any money you can't afford to lose. The horse that I have circled that I'm going to be singling in daily doubles, that I'm going to be singling in pick fours and pick sixes, the number six horse in the 9 race on Saturday, a horse called River Boyne. This horse absolutely kicks ass. This is the race is the American Turf presented by Ram Trucks. It's a grade two. It's for three-year-olds. River Boyne is from Ireland. He's running... he's running absolutely spectacularly. Give me Riverboyne for all the potatoes on the Saturday race. He's 5-1 on the morning line. It's a relatively crowded field of 14 running in the American turf. And I don't have a good read on the race before race 8. I don't have a good read on the race after race 10. So I'm going to be employing the strategy of just trying to circle a couple of horses that I've seen run that I have some good feelings with. And single, you know, and using Riverboyne as a single in the nine. So that's my favorite tip. In last thing I wanted to mention about the Oaks Derby Double. The Oaks is a two-horse race, Midnight Bisou and Mon Ami Girl. Let's say you do your homework and you figure out, oh, there's something about Mon Ami Girl where she's been running on these tracks that have very, 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 very different surface conditions than the likes of Churchill Downs. And you decide, she's overpriced here because she's been beating some okay horses, not great horses, on some more, I guess, less speedy tracks. And then you flip over to Midnight Bisou and you watch her run the Santa Anita Oaks, which was a grade one back in April. And you see her run the perfect race in the Santa Anita Oaks. And you decide, why in the world are these about even? I love the 10 horse in this one. 10 horse all the way. There is a bet you can make that is the Oaks Derby Double. And it's basically pick the winner of the Oaks, pick the winner of the Derby, and the pot gets enormous. This is a hugely popular popular bet. The pool's is enormous, and it's a fun one to bet as well, because if you win on Friday, then you go to bed Friday night and you're just dreaming of something special happening on Saturday and cashing an enormous ticket and taking everybody out on the town. So pick your winner for the Oaks wisely, put them in a double, and then you have free reign, right? I mean, you can, you know, you can do $2 ticket or $1 ticket or whatever you want with a whole slew of the favorites, and then have a relatively stress-free Derby day itself. Because I do think it's very likely that the winner of the Derby is coming from a handful of horses. It's not going to be somebody that it's like, wow, I cannot believe it. I've never even heard of this horse. How in the hell did they just win the Kentucky Derby? That's not the way it works anymore, folks. So with that, you got any final thoughts on horse racing, Andy?
Just have some fun. You know, it's the biggest one.
This is it.
Win some money so you can bet it on the Preakness.
Yes. Now we're talking. All right. Well, appreciate all the input we got here. Have an outstanding Oaks and Derby weekend, and we'll talk to you guys next week.